Welcome to The Bibliophiles, the official podcast of BibLittle Literature. I'm your host, Beth Steffens, and I'm here to provide real lit feels for real lit lovers. Hello, fellow book lovers. Welcome to another episode of The Bibliophiles. My name is Beth Steffens, and I am your host. And today I have a very, very special guest with us. She is one of the funniest, most energetic people I've ever met. She has the biggest heart, and I'm so excited that she's on my show today. She is my mother, Mary Steffens. Welcome to the show, Mom.
Thanks, Beth, and also thank you for the nice introduction. The check is in the mail, by the way.
Oh, don't tell my audience that. I didn't pay you. That came straight from the heart. So I'm really excited that Mom is on the podcast today. She read a book recently that I read almost a year ago, and it's called The Glass Castle, and it was written by Jeanette Walls and published in 2005. Now, The Glass Castle is a memoir, so if you've been a fan of Big Little Literature for a while, you may recall that I haven't always loved memoirs. But last year, I started to realize maybe this genre has something for me, and I think The Glass Castle had a big part in that. So this book follows Jeanette Walls from the time that she's a child up until she's an adult, and she really has an unconventional life. She has parents who should have never been parents in the first place. There's definitely some mental abuse going on in the household. There's a lot of addiction. They live in extreme poverty. They move around a lot. So the book really says a lot, and I really enjoyed reading it. So when I read this book and when I reviewed it for the blog, I gave it 5 flames. Mom, what would you give this book?
Well, Beth, considering that this is the first book I've read in many years, I would give it a 5, because as I told you, I started it on a Friday night and finished it the next day. And if it wouldn't have held my attention, we may not be having this conversation in the first place. But it did hold my attention because when I started reading it, she's going back to her childhood, and I kept thinking, surely this isn't how these people live. And it kept your interest because you wanted to, hopefully things were going to get better, or if they were going to get worse, it kept your interest in those ways.
And just so everybody knows, this was a few weeks ago, Mom sent me a Snapchat on a Friday night, and I happened to be reading as well. And here's Mom reading this book at 8 p.m. at night. And then a couple of hours later, she was already halfway through the book. And then the next day, she had finished it already. So, I mean, and Mom, you don't really read that much, do you?
I do not read that often. You're right. Like I said, this was one of the first books I read in quite a few years. But it did hold my interest so much that you wanted to finish it or see what was going to happen next with this family. So it did keep my interest like that. And otherwise, I don't know how long it would have taken me to read the book.
So what was...
If I would have finished it.
What was your favorite part of the book?
My favorite part of the book was probably how the siblings stuck together and looked after each other. Because I'm from a large family, and I know how that works. You always have each other's back, and I don't know what would have happened to these children if they wouldn't have looked out for each other, because really they were the parents to each other. When they got older, when they attended junior high and high school, things happened with other kids, and they always stood up for each other and looked out for each other because they really had no one else. They didn't have many friends. They didn't have hardly any extended family, and the extended family they did have were dysfunctional also. So to me, that was the best part of the book, seeing how they looked after each other, loved each other, and in the end, it's probably what made them successful as adults.
I would agree. I really enjoyed reading about the siblings. They had such a good relationship. And I mean, they had really awful, adult figures in their life. But for them to come together, I thought was really heartwarming. And for me, my favorite part was probably more from a writer's perspective. I love that, as she starts as a child and she works her way up through her adult life. But she doesn't really have negative thoughts of her parents until she probably gets into high school. And like very implicitly does she talk about how she's changing her opinion of them and how she realizes that this is not the type of life that she should be living or that is even acceptable. But she never comes out and says it right away. It's all very gradual throughout the book. And I mean, now she's an adult as she's writing it. And the fact that she is still able to write from a child's perspective before she comes to these realizations had to take so much restraint. And I can't imagine having, you know, doing that as a writer. That just takes so much talent. And I really respected that from her.
Yes, because you read more often than I do. And I can see where, you know, you think about these things more than I would have thought of them. I didn't think about those so much. Just what really happened in the book all the way through is what kept my interest. So you look at things completely different than I do when you're reading a book. But I see what you mean. She, and also I think part of that is when she was little, the way they moved around so much, they also didn't have much interaction with other people. They were more loners. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. They, you know, sometimes lived in the car, or they lived, they didn't have a chance to really meet too many people because they moved so often. And then when they finally moved to Virginia, they had a house that they lived in for quite some time, if you want to call it a house. And that's also where she started seeing how maybe other children and people really lived. So I think that's part of that too. She really didn't have any awareness of how other people lived or the opportunities out there for her until she got to that point, maybe in junior high and high school, because before that point she really didn't go to school that often, so she didn't see how maybe the real world was.
Right, like she had, like that's all she ever knew, so she didn't know that there were other ways that she should be living, and that, you know, these circumstances she was under were not normal. But
right,
you know,
right.
The fact that her experience and her perspective now did not color her writing as a child, that way you could really see the story through her eyes as a child, I thought was really powerful.
Right, it was.
So for those of you who don't know, my mom works at a school, and, you know, she deals with situations like this all the time. And so I'm wondering, Mom, for one, how do you deal with hearing these stories that you have no control over at school all the time? And do you think that influenced your opinion of the book and as you were reading it?
It definitely did make me think about, you know, at school, I work in the kitchen, so I see a lot of the kids come through the lunch. I don't know some of the stories that the, you know, maybe administration or teachers know about these kids, but eventually you did find out some things about them. And that really made me, when I read this book, think how many of the kids that I see every day maybe have some of these experiences. Some of them I already know do, maybe not to the same level, but some of them I already know live in dire circumstances or have dysfunctional parents or parents with addictions. Some of them I don't know the situation, you know, that they come from. Mm-hmm. But it really hit home because we've had several incidents where we've had children with come and gone. And when you find out what's happened with them, it's very hard sometimes to work there because it's very sad. But also on the other hand, you think, I know one time I heard somebody say to the bus driver, that might be the only smile they see all day. And a bus driver told me that. She goes, I always try to smile when those kids come on the bus, because she remembered somebody telling her that. And I said, I try to think of the same but you know, have those same thoughts when we see kids at lunch. Some of them in junior high, they could care less if you talk to them. But other ones, some of them just really want to have some conversation with somebody that may be saying a kind word to them. A few years ago, and this is a girl who comes from a very nice family, but she also maybe doesn't have many friends. And one day we had some type of appreciation day. And I think the teachers told the kids they could write a letter to someone within the school. They didn't have to sign their name, that they really wanted to say thank you to. And I still keep this letter in a cabinet over at school. And this one girl told me, she said, Miss Mary, every day when I come through the line, even when sometimes I'm having a really bad day, and you always try to say something to make me smile or make me laugh. And she said, I want you to know how much I appreciate that. And so you'd never know what some of these kids are going through, especially teenagers, that just the kindest word can maybe make their whole day or make them think, oh, somebody really does like me or cares about me. So it does make you think when you read these stories that there's a lot more of it going on than we know about or maybe want to admit to.
Well, and I think too, so the same school that you work in, the same community that you live in, is the same community that, you know, we've been a part of for almost 28 years now.
Right.
And when I was going through school, I think we were somehow sheltered from this. Like there were obviously kids who in my class acted out, and I thought, you know, they were disrupting my learning, and learning was all I cared about. But I never really thought about how they might have these backstories, and when they're not in school, they have all of this going on that is clearly causing them to act out and to act in this way.
And that's definitely true. Excuse me. As you know, my daughter-in-law is a teacher, and she's told me the same things. She told me recently, well, this was last year, that a child in her room has, his parents are divorced, and they came to the parent-teacher conference together with the child and are fighting at the parent-teacher conference.
Ugh.
So, yes, what do you think that child, how did they come to school every day? Even though they don't see both parents every day with them being divorced, that doesn't mean they don't hear phone calls or when there's a parent, the drop-off to meet the other parent. That doesn't mean they don't hear some of the things going on. So maybe that child comes to school every day tired because mom and dad were fighting on the phone last night,
mm-hmm.
or mom or dad were supposed to pick them up and they were late and they were fighting about that. So you never know what these kids are coming to school with. And it's not all financial, because some of these kids are really in dire financial, have dire financial problems, but that's not the whole thing. Some of it's drug related. Mom or dad skipped town. You know, they don't have a stable environment at home.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that proves that, like, your background and the things that you see every day influence you and how you act. Like, if you see your parents arguing all the time, then that's how you're going to communicate with people, and that's how you're going to act with them. And I think in relation to the glass castle, that's how the father grew up. I mean, he had a lot of demons. He had a lot of issues, was not cut out to be a father. But, like, and you were telling me this, once they move back to where he's from, and then you get to experience how he grew up, and you meet his parents. And when you see that, you realize, like, that life is all he knows. So, of course, he's going to bring those experiences into, you know, his role as a father and within his family.
Right. I didn't have much sympathy for this father in the beginning of the book, and really at the end either. Once the father moved back to, the family moved back to Virginia, and I saw how he grew up, I mean, his mom and dad and brother were all the same way. They just, I don't even remember if they worked at that point, but they lived in a house that, it did have electricity, which was what they sometimes didn't have as a family growing up, these children. But the grandma and grandpa and the uncle, they were the same way. They sat around and smoked cigarettes all day and drank. They were all alcoholics and very mean. You would think that as a grandmother and grandfather, when their grandkids came back to see them, which they, I don't even know if they had ever seen them, they treated them so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't their fault that their father hadn't brought them there, but they were treated so poorly. And so then I kind of thought, well, that's all the dad knew. He grew up with an alcoholic father and probably mother that didn't care about him and show him much love and affection. And so he didn't know any different route to go. And then the mother, I really, by the end of the book, disliked her more than the father, because she grew up in a family where they did have things, not that monetary is everything, but they did have a nice home. And
it was more conventional, at least.
Right, a more stable environment.
Right.
And for her to, you know, to be able to treat her children that way, she had zero motherly instincts. And so by the end of the book, I really did not like the mother at all, because I thought the father had a little bit of a crutch knowing how he grew up, but the mom had no excuse for how she was to those children.
Yeah, she was just lazy, and she cared more about her mindless dreams that were never going to come true because she never put effort into them than she ever did toward her children.
Right. And she could have tried to pursue those dreams and still been a better mother. She even took a teaching job. And even at that, her children had to help her with her job because she wasn't organized enough or cared enough about that job. They had to practically drag her out of bed some mornings because she didn't want to go to work. So they were being the mother to her. She just had zero motherly instincts. So I was really more upset with her by the time I finished the book than I was with the dad.
And I think just, you know, this in the same realm that our experiences and our backgrounds influence how we interact with other people, they also color our opinions of things. So when I was reading this book, and, you know, like I said, I think I had a little bit more, sympathy for the parents than you did. And part of that, I think, is because the person who recommended the book to me immediately said, like, there are clearly mental health problems within this family. So when I was reading that, I had that in the back of my mind the whole time. But, you know, so many times throughout the book, you know, despite how terrible the parents were to the children, I could still see that they loved their kids, you know, in spite of all these things that their kids were going through, I could still tell that they loved them. And I had a little bit more sympathy, I think, than you did when we were discussing the book. And so I was just wondering, do you think the parents loved their kids at all?
And I know why you had, probably not as much, you had more sympathy towards them than I did, maybe because I'm a mom and you just can't understand people doing that to your children.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the mother, I don't know. I think she just had a zero care attitude about the children. I don't even know if she loved her children. Because if she did, she sure didn't show it. I do think the father loved them more. He seemed to show more affection, especially when he wasn't drinking. He showed more affection towards his children. But it was very seldom that you saw her show any affection or love towards those children. So that was my opinion of her. So by the end of the book, I just had almost zero respect for her. Because it was very hard to see a mother treat her children like that. And she had a job as a teacher, but where was that money going? And I do know the father probably took a lot of it to drink. But before he could get to that point, why didn't she buy more food for them? Why didn't she try to make things better for them? And then when I found out she received a monthly check from the oil fields that her family owned in Texas, where was that money going? I don't know if it was a little bit or a lot of money, but either way, she could have done something with that money, and she just didn't care enough about it. And that was just mind-blowing to me as a mom to think that somebody didn't care enough that they wanted to make things better for their children. I mean, there were days those kids went without food. Within the book, they say how they would, you know, maybe hide in the bathroom and wait till other kids came and threw part of their lunch away from their, you know,
lunchbox. That was so heartbreaking. It was hard to read that part.
Me too. It was very hard for me to read because they would go in and, you know, who wants to eat somebody's half bologna sandwich? A child that hasn't eaten all day, that's who. And working at school, we see that we are told some of these kids, that's the only decent meal they have in a day. Or, you know, and I always try to think of them, like, how would we feel if we were that hungry every day that we couldn't wait to get to school to have that meal? And, you know, that makes me very sad to think that a mom could do that to her children, because I can't imagine that she let herself get that hungry every day. I just can't believe that. And then the circumstances of their home, the plumbing was, they didn't even have
I don't think they had plumbing.
Yes. And their electricity was so poor that they were afraid they were going to get electrocuted at all times. And when it rained, it wasn't a drop of water. It was like a flood in their kitchen. And they didn't even have proper beds to sleep on. It was just terrible to think that, and this didn't happen that many years ago, that people lived in those conditions, you know, within our own United States. But it was brought on by themselves. They didn't really care to better themselves. And then the father said they had too much pride to get public assistance. So the kids could have got lunches at school, but they didn't want to go that route. So to me, that was just mind-blowing that parents could do that to their children. Because I can't imagine the mom or dad went all day without eating. I just don't believe that happened.
Yeah, and I think this is where our backgrounds come into play. I mean, you're a mom, you work at school, like you have a totally different life than I do. I mean, the thought of being a mother, oh my God, it scares me. So of course, like your opinion is going to be a little bit different than mine because your background and your everyday life, it, you know, influences that
opinion.
Definitely,
yes.
So I want to talk about addiction a little bit. So, you know, we've mentioned that the father is an alcoholic, but I also felt like the mom was addicted to the father. Like, even though, like, that's not a substance abuse problem, but she, like, there were so many times where she wanted to leave him or where the kids, you know, tried to talk her into it because he was clearly unhealthy for the family. Do you think people can be addicted to something that's, you know, not necessarily a substance and that's preventing them from making good decisions?
I think they can be addicted, especially, I don't know so much about in the modern age because women have more choices or jobs available and that kind of thing. I don't know that she was so much addicted to him as if she was just, in my opinion, a loser in so many ways that she didn't care enough to, or maybe she was, I don't think she was afraid to take the kids on her own because sometimes they were on their own a lot with him gone and basically the kids raised themselves anyway. I think she was just too lazy to go about it and didn't care enough about her kids to do it.
And even if, you know, even though the father was an alcoholic and he had his own issues, I think like having the whole family together at least gave her a little bit of a crutch. But if she had left, like all the responsibility would be on her and she would have to take care of them, even though nobody was taking care of them when they were together. So yeah. I felt like she was afraid to move on because she was losing that crutch of her husband.
I never thought of it that way, but that is a good point because then she definitely would have been on her own. She was basically on her own anyway, but then she would have
nobody to blame but herself then.
Right, that's true. And maybe she always thought some of his dreams might come true also, where he was going to, you know, get this big job and invent something and blah, blah, blah. Maybe she thought that would come true also. But I also don't know how much she cared about having a proper home or anything, because as we find out later in the book, even after the children moved on, she still lived in the same type of circumstances and didn't seem to bother her at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think society has, you know, our attitudes toward addiction, regardless of what that addiction is, can be a little bit hypocritical. So it's like, you know, with before somebody gets help, we tend to shun them and we judge them. But then as soon as they say that they want to get help and they want to get better, it becomes a disease, even though they've had this disease the whole time. That was preventing them from moving on and from getting help. Do you share that same opinion?
I think they have to admit they have the problem before anything can happen. As you know, I had a brother who was an alcoholic, and the same with him. No matter what we did to help him, money, helping him with a ride someplace. My one brother helped him do all of his taxes after he hadn't done it for several years, and he didn't even care enough to come by and get the paperwork. That kind of thing I really saw firsthand, and my dad had said many years ago, you can't help someone that doesn't want to help themselves. And I found that to be so true, because he had the opportunity so many times to get help, and he never took those opportunities. Or if he took those opportunities, he wasn't grateful for them, and then he never did care about getting out of being a drunk, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very sad to see that happen to someone within your family, but also you finally have to admit to yourself, I cannot make him go to rehab. I cannot make him stop drinking. And when I say somebody died with just a shirt on their back, basically that's what he did. Mm-hmm. Because by that time he had nothing. And it was very sad to see, but also, you know, that you have to admit to yourself that you can't make somebody better. They have to want it for themselves. And I think that was with this family too. They had to want it for themselves. And apparently they didn't want it enough.
Yeah, it was only the kids who wanted it.
Right.
I can't stop thinking, like, every single thing we talk about brings me back to this idea that our experiences color our opinions of things. I mean, you working at a school, you seeing this every single day with kids in your school, you having an alcoholic brother, you being a mother, like, obviously those are things that I have never encountered. And so we just keep going back to this idea that things that happen in our everyday life are the things that are going to influence our opinions of things.
Definitely. And even, like, where you live... you live in a completely different world than mm-hmm. you grew up in, and you see things a whole lot different than I do. And not that we're both wrong on those opinions, but just like you said, it's maybe your environment and how you grow up. Because I still see things every day at school, you know, children that, we had a child last year, very dire circumstances, and the, sheriff's department got involved and went to their home, and mom had moved here with her kids, made up a few stories about why they were here. And when they went to their place, the kids didn't have any place to sleep. There was hardly any food in the house, nothing. And I think we've seen that child. He was only at our school a short time, but I thought, we've seen that child every day, and we didn't know things were so sad at their home. Basically, he had almost no clothes to wear. The nurse gave him clothes, and he was so appreciative. You would have thought it was Christmas when she gave him some clothes. They were mm-hmm. used clothes, but to him, they were like brand new. And it was so sad for all of us at school when we heard all the circumstances that went into this. So you do see things like that. If I hadn't worked at school, I wouldn't, I wouldn't have known maybe some of the bad circumstances so many kids live in.
Mm-hmm.
It was an eye opener.
And I think the fact that because like these types of situations happen way more frequently than we can even imagine. And to me, that's where the glass castle derives so much of its power, because you read this story and you think, God, like there's like, I can't believe somebody lives like that. Like she has to be one in a million. And sadly, this happens way more frequently than we could ever imagine.
It happens way more frequently than we can imagine. And also, I think now it happens more often. Because of some of the drug crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is, at least where I stand at school, that is one of the biggest problems. Almost all the children that have a really bad background, a lot of it is drug related, not just drugs, alcohol, which is also a drug. But a lot of it goes back to those two items, you know, things. In fact, a friend of mine is a foster parent now, and she tells me, almost all the children that she fosters come from some type of addiction within their family.
Mm-hmm.
That are, you know, and it's mom or dad have been on drugs, or they've had been in rehab, or there's abuse going on at the home. But almost all of it goes back to, sadly, drug abuse. And I think that's maybe why we have, even though I didn't know it was so, it was such a common problem now. I think a lot of it is drug related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, despite all of these negatives, and then you think, you know, how often this is happening in the everyday world, it's just, you know, outside of this book. But to go back to your favorite part of this book, the most heartwarming aspect of it is the siblings and how much they love each other. So despite all of these horrible things that are happening, that's the one silver lining in this whole memoir. And I'm so glad that she was able to put in those memories that she has with her siblings, because they really are so touching.
They were. And without each other, I don't think they would have become successful adults, because
they need some kind of support system.
Pardon me?
They need some kind of support system.
They need a support system. And I don't think without that, it would have been easy for them maybe to, you know, go to the same patterns as their family, as their mom and dads were in. Because that happens a lot. You know, you can have an alcoholic father and then you become like the father in the book and his dad. So I do agree. I think that's what kind of kept them, you know, made them become better adults. Mm-hmm. And they fought for each other. And also when they started junior high and high school, because that's the first time they'd really been in school for any long period of time. And some of the teachers, when you think a teacher or someone within your school can't have a big impact on you, that is so not true, because these kids were so smart, even though their parents were, in my opinion, losers, they were so smart. The mom was a big reader, so the kids learned to read. The dad was really good in math. So they, when they started school, or finally were able to attend school, they were above a lot of kids because they did learn so much at home from their parents. So that helped them in school, and their teachers saw that and kind of built on that, which I'm so thankful for them that they were able to go to school part of junior high and high school, because that's where they got the influences from teachers and even some outsiders that came in, it was the people that came in from New York to this school and talked to them, and they realized there's a world out there for me. And the most heartwarming is when the one sister, who is the second sister, she had an opportunity over the summer to go away with a family to babysit and make some really good money for herself. But instead, she gave it to her sister, told her sister to take that job because her sister was older and could use that money right after graduation to get to New York for her bus and everything. And I just thought that was the most generous thing that sister could do, because she could have definitely taken that job and that would have helped her on her way, but instead she gave it to her older sister, knowing how much more it meant to her who was graduating. And that just was, it was almost a tearjerker moment in that mm-hmm. book to see how much love they had for each other.
I know. And then I started thinking, like, would Aaron and I do that for each other? And I know Aaron would definitely do it for me, but am I that nice that I would do it for Aaron? I don't know. I would like to think yes.
I think so. I don't know, but when push comes to shove, definitely you would. And I know when my family, I have five sisters, and we would always do something like that for each other. Not that we have ever had to, but I know push comes to shove, we would do the same thing for each other. And so that part of the book just melted me, thinking, man, that look what she did for her sister. And that sister could have went to New York and just went on her merry way and not thought about her, but she didn't. She kept her mind and said, look, when it's your turn, you're coming too. And she did. The way they stuck together was just made the book for me. It really did.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it really is the way that you and your siblings are. And like, I mean, your siblings taught me how family should be and how you should love and respect your siblings. So you guys have taught me a lot too.
Even, well, thank you.
Even though you're completely crazy in the best way.
Well, we are a little bit crazy, but okay, little bits of doesn't really describe it. But in the end, we do have each other's back.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about the title a little bit, The Glass Castle. So it's been a little bit since I've read the book, so you had to remind me, but The Glass Castle is pretty much her father's dream. He wants to be able to build this, you know, extravagant house for his family. He's going to use all of his intelligence to be able to do so. Is that correct? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, it is. And honestly, I think if that man could have kept sober, he could have definitely built that glass castle for them, because he was so smart. He just couldn't get it all together.
He couldn't overcome his own demons.
Right. And that glass castle kind of depicts the whole picture. That is what he kept telling his kids, this is what I'm working for. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. And it just never panned out because he couldn't he couldn't get it all together. He was always going to invent something and make money and all this, which never happened. But for those kids, they built their own glass castle, because they all became very productive adults in the end. No, they didn't build a glass castle, but they did become very productive adults at the end and were on their own and got away from that type of life. So I was just sad that he never was able to attain that goal for himself, really, not for the kids so much, but for himself.
Mom, it's like we share the same brain, which is scary, because I was just going to say, I feel like for the kids, especially Jeanette, like she built her own glass castle, and it didn't necessarily matter like what her career was or where she was living. But for me, it was like her being able to live on her own terms and with her own rules, because throughout her childhood and, you know, by the time she finally moves away from home, she's always had these things working against her that she can do nothing about. I mean, they're moving from place to place. They're living with their grandparents, who are just really terrible grandparents, and there's nothing she can do to escape this. So for me, I saw that her personal glass castle was just being able to live the life she wanted on her own terms. And I feel like at the end, you find that she's finally able to attain that.
Really, and I think that was with all the children. Now, the youngest one, Maureen, at the end of the book, we really don't know what her adult life is going to be like, because she's kind of distanced herself from the family some. And I think that's part because she was so much younger. And when they moved near the grandparents in the end of the book, or at that later in the book, some of the local people felt bad for her, and they took her in. And so really, she didn't live at home very much. She was with other families from school that tried to help her out. So maybe that's why she was kind of distanced from the older ones as she got older. So we really don't know if she attains her goals, but it seems like the other three, no matter what jobs they had or whatever, they were able to live on their own and have a home and, you know, live the kind of life they wanted to for themselves.
Well, even with the younger sister, like, you know, yes, she starts spending time with other people who are outside of her home and her family, but even at some point, like, her siblings move away and they're not all together anymore. So she loses a little bit of that support system when they move away, which is going to affect, you know, her own decisions and the way she wants to live her life.
I agree, that because they were quite a bit older, and so of course they couldn't stay there forever. And because she wasn't at home all the time, maybe they felt like, okay, we can go on our own, and she'll be okay because she has other people in the community there looking after her. We know she's not going to be living in that dump of a house without plumbing and terrible electricity, because these other people are looking after her. So maybe that, you know, they didn't feel the guilt that, oh, we got to stay behind, right, to make sure she's okay, because they figured she was going to be okay.
Right. Yeah, speaking about how gross their house was, I mean, the brother Brian he laid underneath literally just a piece of cardboard. So,
yes.
So when the because the house leaked, and so he didn't want to get wet when it rained. I mean, you were saying to me, how the hell did they not get sick? How did they even survive, yes, living in these conditions? It's just incredible.
And, you know, I'm sure they never went to the doctor or anything. How did living with hardly any food and living, well, if they found food in a dumpster, because at one point she was getting food kind of out of the dumpster, mm-hmm, within town. How did they not get sick or get bad infections from, you know, the filth they lived in? And something we didn't bring up that I wanted to is how the dad tried to pimp out his daughter.
Oh, that was
money.
Was disgusting. So, like, even though, like, towards, like, when they're in high school, you kind of see, like, what his life had been like before he started the family. Somehow, though, I still, like, my sympathy went down for him because of, like, he's pimping out his daughter. Like, I don't, like, reading that scene was so hard for me. I just could not imagine what she had to have been thinking throughout that.
I agree. That was so hard to read because I can't imagine anyone trying to do that to one of my daughters. And for the dad to say, well, it'll be okay, just to support his own drinking habit, is why he did that. And to me, that was just, I agree, my opinion of him went way, 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 way down after that. Not that I had a big opinion of him before, but to think that you could do that to your own child just proved to me what kind of people they really were, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I don't say it enough, this book really reminds me what great parents I have. So thanks to you and Dad for being good people.
I don't know about great parents, but...
oh, I do.
But the things that these kids went through was just... And like you said, it happens more often than we know, mm-hmm, so, which is, you know, really sad. So, but when you think you don't make a difference, remember that letter that girl wrote me that day. No, she's not from an abusive family. She really has a wonderful family. But to think that just maybe saying hi to somebody every day that's down and out, or when you know they don't have many friends, and especially in junior high, they can look sad a lot. Just trying to say a kind word to them, say, wow, you got a, I like that sweater you have on today. Your hair's a little bit different. Some kids feed off of that, others just like, oh, who's that old bag? But some kids really feed off of that and need just a little reassurance every day. And working at school has really made me believe that.
Did you cry when you got that letter? I can't imagine what that must have felt like.
Well, I didn't cry, but it really, like I said, it's happened. This girl is in high school. It's happened about 4 years ago. And I still keep it in a little locker that I have at school. And I see that every once in a while. And it just makes me think, okay, you think you have just a little job working at a school as a basic lunch lady, and you don't know what kind of impact you have on someone. You know, maybe she was having a really bad morning, because I don't know if kids made fun of her some, you know, I don't want to say too much about her situation, but maybe kids are making fun of her for whatever reason, her weight or her hair or whatever, and she was having a really bad morning, but she comes through and you can just say something nice to her. Man, I hope you have you don't look like you're having a very good morning, but I hope your afternoon gets better. You think that means nothing, but to somebody that means a lot, especially mm-hmm. somebody that's had a really bad morning. So.
Well, that's something you've taught me too, that, and you taught me this well before you started working at the school with kids. It's just that, you know, a little compliment goes a long way, and a smile goes a long way too, to making somebody feel better every day.
It really does, especially for some kids that maybe don't have that.
So like we said before, this is the first book you've read in a really long time. So do you think you're going to start reading more?
I think I will. But I will have to get some advice from you or my sisters, because my five sisters, they read all the time. They switch books back and forth. We'll be somewhere and they're talking about a book they just read, and the other one will say, well, when you get finished, I want to read it. So I might have to join that club.
I think it's hilarious that I come from two parents who do not read. And like, even Scott and Aaron aren't big readers either. And then somehow this has become my favorite hobby. So like, sometimes I wonder if I'm adopted.
We have too many things alike that you're not adopted. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, that's true. We should ask the rest of the family. They would definitely agree I'm yours.
Definitely they would agree.
Well, I'm excited that this book inspired you to start reading more. And I really hope you come back to the podcast, because I know everybody would love it.
I would love to. I'm not sure how soon it's going to happen, but I would love to.
And just so everybody knows, this is a woman who cannot sit still. So the fact that she sat on a couch on a Friday night and read a book is mind-blowing.
Well, it was in the middle of winter when it's ugly and I can't do anything outside. So that might be a little bit of help with that.
Give yourself more credit, Mom.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks again, Mom, for joining. And we'll see you next time, guys.
Thank you, Beth.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Bibliophiles. If you want more, be sure to check out my blog, Big Little Literature. If you want to hear today's music from Evan Schaefer, check him out at soundcloud.com/Evan Schaefer. See you next time.